You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Last year, the New England Patriots bulldozed their way to the Super Bowl with a chance to be the first team in history to go 19-0. Their opponent was the New York Giants, a 10-6 team with a baby-faced quarterback whose star tight end was out with a broken leg. But the Giants stunned everyone with a historic underdog victory, capped by a game-winning touchdown catch by wide receiver Plaxico Burress, who has chronicled the run-up to that moment in a new book called Giant, The Road to the Super Bowl. It's published by Harper Entertainment, and it brings Plaxico Burress to the show today. Hello.
How you doing?
You're literally a giant. How tall are you?
6'6".
There are some very successful wide receivers who are a lot shorter than you, but right. How much of an advantage do you think your height gives you when you're going up for a ball?
I think it gives me a significant advantage. A lot of the guys that I play against, they're, I don't think too many of them are over 6 feet tall. So, I mean, if the quarterback puts the ball in a place where only I can get it, then it basically makes you unguardable at times.
So how does someone like Marvin Harrison do it?
I know. Marvin's a very special guy. Quick feet, exceptional hands, a smart player, very intelligent. And when you see a guy like Marvin have as much success as he's had over the past 10, 11 years, you just have to tip his hat to him, because he probably plays guys that are actually bigger than him and faster than him, but he finds a way to just put up remarkable numbers.
The Patriots came into the Super Bowl undefeated, and they had beaten the Giants in the last game of the regular season. But that didn't stop you from publicly predicting a Giants win, and you even predicted the score, even though you made a little higher than it turned out. Is that the sort of thing that athletes do? Because I think the only time anybody notices is when the prediction comes true. If it doesn't, you know, well, that was just the kind of thing that happens before a big game.
Well, you know, I always say that, you know, if you look at, like, the CBS Today or NFL Today before the game start, the guys that sit on the panel, all they do is make predictions about what they think will be the outcome. But when a player makes a prediction, it becomes national headlines, so to speak. And, you know, when I actually made the prediction, it's like, you know, it was nothing for us to be afraid of. I mean, at the time, the Patriots were the one who were trying to reach a record of 19-0. We were just trying to prove something to ourselves and to the great city of New York that we could dethrone those guys from having a perfect season.
So is that a way of building up your team's confidence?
Not really. I mean, we were already a confident bunch going into the game.
You weren't intimidated at all by the Patriots? They had one of the most amazing seasons, maybe the most amazing season in the history of football.
I mean, it's football, not poker. I mean, it's really nothing to be intimidated about. I mean, they try to intimidate you with their style of play and different things that they do, but as a man and as a football player, being a competitor, going up against another guy one-on-one, it's nothing to be afraid of.
They do a lot of trash talking, don't they?
Yeah, they do a lot of trash talking. In today's game, trash talking is a part of the game, and
everybody does it.
Yeah, that's a part of the game where they actually try to get you off of your focus and try to get you to concentrate on an individual person and try to get you off of the aspect at hand, which is to win the football game.
There was shock in their eyes when the game turned out the way that it did. Because would you say that throughout most of it they were pretty confident that they were going to win, and maybe even underestimated your ability?
Well, they're a very confident bunch, and they have reason to be. I mean, they've won 3 championships in the last 5 or 6 years, I believe. And they have a great coach, and they have a great quarterback, and they have a great group of guys who have proven that they can win. So why wouldn't those guys be confident?
The Giants had a pretty tough time just getting to the Super Bowl. What was the temperature during the NFC Championship game in Green Bay?
From what I understand, it was probably like minus 23 degrees. It was one of those games where you really couldn't believe as a person that it could really be that cold.
So how did you do so well? You had a breakout game.
You know, just a one-track mind. You know, I've been to that, you know, I've been in that position 3 times, and I lost to the New England Patriots twice when I played for the Pittsburgh Steelers in the championship game. And you know, when you actually lose that game, it's a lifetime scar, because you don't realize how close you are from going to the Super Bowl until you actually lose that game. And I always said to myself that if I ever had an opportunity to get back to another championship game, that I would just leave it all out on the field, and you know, I wouldn't have any regrets after that game.
Well, during hot games, the athletes seem to be drinking Gatorade. What do you drink during a game that's that cold?
Actually, we weren't serving any Gatorade, and we weren't serving any water. We were serving chicken broth on the sidelines.
Chicken soup?
Yeah.
Well, is that
chicken
typical?
Chicken soup without the chicken and the noodles. So it was just the broth. It was no water or Gatorade in sight.
And that's because there is a certain protein in it?
It has a high salinity. And, I don't want to drink water or Gatorade when it's minus 23 degrees. And plus, it won't stay in a liquid form. It'll freeze. So that's the main reason why you turn to broth instead of water.
And I'm sure the coaches are happy because you're not likely to pour chicken soup on them if you win the game.
Yeah, but then, it's so good at the time, you just want to keep drinking, and you accidentally fill yourself up with it.
My guest is Plaxico Burress, who has written, with the help of Jason Cole, Giant, The Road to the Super Bowl. It's published by Harper Entertainment. You would... played hurt as well, hadn't you?
Yeah, you know, I had a few injuries last year, but which I really weren't able to overcome to get back to 100% so I could be able to form at my ultimate level. But at the same time, I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot mentally about the game, studying the game in depth, and just trying to, trying to get an extra beat on the guy when I was playing against him, because I knew I was playing a step behind because of the injuries.
Do you think that the Patriots were aware that you'd hurt your knee?
I don't think they knew. We kind of kept it to
ourselves.
They didn't
videotape your practices?
evidently not. They didn't get a chance to videotape that part of it.
So how do you get in shape enough to play when you have a really bad knee?
My ankle really was the reason why I couldn't practice last year. It stopped me from running and really getting into the ultimate shape that I could be in. So
you couldn't turn to the right. You could only go to the left?
Yeah, I could only go to the I could only go to the left. I couldn't go to the right. But it was just one of those things that I had to overcome, mentally. I've dealt with a lot of things in my life that I had to overcome to go out and just perform.
But they must have noticed during the course of the game that you were only cutting to the left.
I don't think they really did. I don't think you really pay attention to anything like that. And, I kind of got away with it.
How much of the game do you actually see when you're running a pattern? Did you see David Tyree's amazing fourth quarter catch?
Mm-hmm. I see the whole field when I'm out there playing. It's something that you learn to do as a professional football player. You have to see the whole field in order to be successful and understand the concept of the offense, even if you're not getting the football, because you can get somebody hurt if you're not on the same page with just the play itself and understanding the concept of the offense. And the David Tyree play, at the angle that I was coming from, I wasn't able to actually see the helmet part of the catch, but I saw him jump up and grabbed the ball with two hands, and I was like, wow, that's a great play. But I didn't understand the significance and the greatness in the play until after the game when I saw the replay.
Mm-hmm. Although they do often do the replay on the giant screen, but at that point,
at that time, you're so focused on the game that, you just keep going.
Well, Tyree is an unlikely Super Bowl hero.
Right.
I guess it makes the point that not all – the heroes are superstars.
Over time, if you look at it, some guys that have performed in the Super Bowl of guys that that are not superstars, and it's common, it happens, and guys go out and just they make a play and they just become legends. And David Tyree, although he is a good football player, he's a veteran. He hasn't had the opportunity to go out and play the wide receiver position because of the depth that we have. But he's made the Pro Bowl playing on special teams, so you can't say he's not a good player.
Well, what about your game-winning touchdown catch? Is that something that you'd practiced a lot?
Actually, we practice it every Friday. We practice, running that route from, 5 or 6 yards going into the end zone. And, me and Eli, we practice it before the game, every game. We practice it on both sides of the football field, on both sides of the end zone. So it's something that we practice because, sometimes you don't get to run the ball in every time from 5 or 6 yards. You got to go out and make a play. And, we actually work on it a lot.
Well, sometimes the play works, sometimes it doesn't. Right. Sometimes it looks like the defense was actually expecting a certain play. Another time they look like they're totally caught by surprise. Right. Did you think that play was going to win the game? Before you ran it, obviously.
When my number got called, it's just, you know, it's one of those things in the back of your mind. You're like, you know, everybody's counting on me to make this play. You know, everybody knows the call, and they say, hey, you know, if Flex gets one-on-one, we know where the ball is going. And, you know, it was just a great throw by Eli, and it was basically a one-on-one coverage. And I basically thought that, you know, before the play started, that it was going to be a jump ball. It was going to be something that I had to fight for and go up and get. And I gave the guy a good move, and I turned around. The ball was in there, and I was wide open in the back of the end zone.
Yeah, and he was on the ground.
Yeah, good place.
I guess if you give him a good enough move, a guy loses his footing. That's what happened in that case.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that we work on. You know, it's kind of like repetition for us. And, you know, just like you guys come to work every day, we do those type of things every day to perfect it, because you never know when that time may come.
You mentioned that you were on the Steelers when they lost to the Patriots in the playoffs twice.
Right.
Does that kind of thing teach you anything? I mean, did you learn from experience, or were the Patriots that you were playing in the last Super Bowl a totally different team from the one that you had played with the
Steelers? Pretty much the same, you know, concept offensively and defensively for New England, but a totally different team. I mean, when I lost to those guys, it was only my second year in the NFL. And I remember going into the locker room after that. You know, I remember the older guys, you know, crying and upset that they didn't get a chance to go to the Super Bowl. And
being they really cry?
Yeah, I mean, after you lose a game like that, I mean, when you have guys that play 11, 10, 11, 12 years to try to get to the Super Bowl, they understood, you know, what just happened. But me being in my second year, I was like, hey, man, don't worry about it. We'll get there next year. But, you know, I was young. I didn't understand it. And the next year, we didn't get to the AFC Championship, and we ended up going back my fifth year. And some of the guys that, you know, lost that AFC Championship game in second year, went around my fifth year. And that's when the, you know, the light kind of went on, and we lost that game. And, you know, for me to be out, to be able to defeat those guys in the fashion that we did in the Super Bowl, you know, it means a lot to myself.
You mentioned that Bill Belichick is a great coach, but to the fans, he's not a fan favorite outside of Boston. Do opposing players personalize coaches? I'm not talking about their own coach. We'll get to that later. I mean, do you say, I really want to beat this guy because I dislike him? Or I dislike the way his team plays?
I can't really speak from other players' point of view, but, I mean, you always want to beat the opposing coach. And like I said,
even if you like the guy.
Yeah, you want to win. I mean, every time you step on the football field, you want to win. But, you know, some coaches are not liked more than others, and he just chooses to be one.
In 2006, the year you left Pittsburgh, the Steelers did win the Super Bowl.
Right.
Did you have second thoughts about what you did?
I didn't have second thoughts at all, because it was my personal decision to, you know, to leave that organization. You know, I wanted to see myself kind of get to the level that I knew I had the potential in myself to become. And, you know, the offense and things that I was in over there, it really didn't fit my style of play, so to speak. And when those guys, when they beat Denver Broncos to go to the Super Bowl and the AFC Championship, I was the biggest supporter. I was the first guy to pick the phone up and congratulate them.
Because many of them were your friends.
Yeah, I still talk to some of those guys, you know, maybe once or twice a week. And, you know, when they won the Super Bowl, I called them the next day, say, hey, man, congratulations, you guys deserved it. And, you know, when you get to know guys personally off of the football field and the families and the kids, you know, it's a lot more than football. And you form bonds and real friendships.
But when you decide to sign with a team, what's the determining factor? You were pursued by a number of teams, weren't you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you look at the situation that you're going into. I mean, for me as a receiver, I was looking at my quarterback situation, being able to play with a good tight end, a good running back, and an explosive offense, so to speak. Our offense is really balanced as far as running pass, and I put all those things in consideration, where I was going and where I was playing at, and, you know, it was a perfect place for me.
Well, a lot of players try to stay away from a city like New York because they feel there's just too much pressure.
There's no pressure at all. I mean, as long as you're going out and doing the correct things and doing what you're supposed to be doing, playing hard and performing well, then, you know, it's nothing to be afraid of. I mean, a lot of guys that I know won't come to New York and play, but I mean, I accept it, and it's been a wonderful ride so far.
And then there are other players who come here, and then they decide to move here. You moved to New Jersey, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think I'm going to. I think I'm a lifer. I love the city of New York, and I love New Jersey, and I think I'll be here for a long time.
Plaxico Burress has written, with the help of Jason Cole, Giant, The Road to the Super Bowl, published by Harper Entertainment. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with Plaxico Burress, who has written, with the help of Jason Cole, Giant, The Road to the Super Bowl, published by Harper Entertainment. We were talking about choosing what team to come to. Some players will stay away from a team because they think the coach might not be a great fit. Had you heard about Tom Coughlin's reputation as a disciplinarian when you chose the team?
Yeah, I heard about him through a few players that had played for him in the past. And you know, that really wasn't the underlying reason why I was going to let that deter me from going where I wanted to go. I mean, at the end of the day, it's all about, you know, being accountable, you know, having respect for the guys that you play with and to play hard and be a good teammate and win games.
Well, what about previous coaches, Bill Cowher at Pittsburgh and then your college coach at Michigan State? Have they also been tough disciplinarians?
Coach Saban was when I was in Michigan State. But you know, as far as Coach Cowher, I mean, Coach Cowher was a great friend to me. He was a friend, a teacher, and a coach all at the same time. And you know, he was a real outgoing person. As far as the guys that he coached, and you know, he was a player's coach, so to speak. He cared about, you know, things that, you know, went on outside of football, and you just felt like you could talk to him about anything.
Well, playing for someone like Tom Coughlin can be expensive because of all the fines. How many fines do you think you've paid?
I don't know. I know it's a high number. And,
you know, what kinds of offenses wind up getting you fined?
Just little things. I mean, you know, not being on time or being 5 minutes early, so to speak. And it's just something.
You mean 5 minutes early instead of 10 minutes early?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I still don't understand it, but you know, there's a little thing that you kind of got to kind of get used to, so to speak.
Has he loosened up a bit?
I would say so. You know, he kind of takes into consideration a little bit more now, you know, how the players are feeling, if we're tired, or what's the morale of the team, or what we think about certain situations. You know, he asked certain guys about, you know, how the team is feeling and things like that. So I guess he kind of gets an inside insight on how the players feel, not just his own observation.
Well, when you showed up, the Giants were starting off with a new coach, a young, untested quarterback, and I'm sure you didn't think that you'd achieve the kind of success you did as quickly as you have.
I did, and that was one of the reasons why I came, because I saw a talent in Eli Manning that you can only imagine or think that he would, you know, kind of coming to his own, so to speak, later on down the line. You can't expect a guy to come in his first, second year and just be a star. And, you know, I've seen him, you know, take great strides and becoming a better person and a great quarterback. And now he's coming into his own and to become an elite quarterback in this league.
He's one of the few players on the team who's as tall as you are. But do you think that he would have come in for as much criticism for his uneven play if he had been in a smaller market?
Oh, no. I mean, like I said earlier, a lot of guys.
It's just the expectations, Peyton's brother, Archie's son.
Some of that has to do with it and with the, you know, the way that he came to be a New York Giant, you know, saying that he wouldn't play in San Diego and things like that. So, you know, he kind of started out behind the eight ball with the fans and everybody else. And, you know, some of the criticism that he has taken over the past, you know, 2 or 3 years since I've been here, you know, a lot of it has been unfair to him. And I just tell him, hey, man, just relax, play your game, and just be Eli. I mean, that's the only person you can be.
Well, do players take that kind of criticism to heart?
No, but, you know, at the same time, you know, professional athletes have lives outside of the job, and I think that's what fans and people that are fanatics really don't understand is that, I mean, we have to go out and take our families out to eat and, you know, live, try to live close to normal lives as possible. And when the things are being said like that and you're out people say things to you even when you're walking down the street, but we're quote unquote professional, so we're just supposed to just brush it off and keep moving.
Although I'm sure they say nice things more often than they say nasty things. Yeah. Wide receivers always seem to fall so gracefully. Do you spend a lot of time learning how to take a hit?
Oh, you have to. You have to learn how to protect yourself, you know, especially when you're not really not focusing on the defender. You're more focused on the ball at playing my position. So you have to learn how to protect yourself in certain situations and know how to get out of jams.
Because you're really vulnerable sometimes. You're leaping for a ball and a guy is coming to tackle you in your midsection.
Yeah,
you
know, I'm not really worried about getting hit. I mean, my goal and my job is to go out to receive the football. And if I'm worried about getting hit or looking at a defender, then I'm not focusing on the football.
But you do talk a lot about injuries in this book, right? Avoiding them, sustaining them, recovering from them, right? Playing through them. Do you think that the fans understand just how bruising the game really is?
No, because they haven't experienced it. And they can say they understand, but until you're on the grind of 5 or 6 days a week practicing and playing on Sundays and physical football games in the weather and hot, the heat and the cold, and you really don't have an idea of what we go through.
Although you got the nickname Plaxico No Practico.
I guess. I think one of my teammates came up with that.
Because your injuries, you weren't asked to practice? Or because there are players who have a reputation for just not wanting to practice.
I've been, practicing ever since I tore my ligament off the bone of my ankle, so it really didn't allow me to do too much. Mm. And, I would play on Sundays, and I would be so sore on Monday through Wednesday that I was walking with a noticeable limp. You know, other than that, me having that injury, I would have been practicing all season.
Has the injury healed itself finally?
It's doing pretty good. It's about 90%, and I've just been rehabbing and really getting aggressive with it to try to get back to 100% so I can be at my best this year.
So you just you prepare for games in other ways rather than practicing?
Doing little things that I can do for us, catching the football and, just working on the things that can, help me from becoming more injured, lifting weights and things like that.
My guest is Plaxico Burress. He's written a book with the help of Jason Cole called Giant, The Road to the Super Bowl, published by Harper Entertainment. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. A lot of listeners want to know where the name Plaxico comes from.
I was actually named after my uncle. It's actually two of us. He lives in Woodbridge, Virginia. And, my grandma named him Plaxico. And he was a Vietnam vet who did three tours and came home without a scratch.
But you have no idea where the name Plaxico comes from?
I heard it's Egyptian, from what I understand. And, my mom went into labor with me. He's the only one in the house who was able to rush my mother to the hospital, so she named me after him.
You grew up in Virginia?
Yes.
But you went to Michigan State.
Right.
Why not one of the southern schools, football powers?
My initial school that I wanted to attend was the University of Florida, I wasn't able to get the scores that I needed to pass my SATs to go to the University of Florida, so I ended up going to Fort Union Military Academy in Virginia.
There was a grades problem?
Yes, I didn't pass the SATs just to get the scores that I needed to get to go to University of Florida. And Michigan State had been the last visit that I had been on. And, when I went on my visit there my senior year in high school, it was a cool place, and I really enjoyed my visit there. And at the partial time, the SEC didn't accept partial qualifiers, so I had to find somewhere else to go. And I called the people at Michigan State. I said, hey, I'm coming.
Do you think that your time at military school was a good thing for you?
Most definitely. Because a guy like myself at 18, you really – I really wasn't a disciplined type of person, growing up in the neighborhood that I grew up in.
And where there was all the drugs and all.
Yeah, I mean, everything was just, it's what I want, it's what I say. I really didn't have that discipline, outside of my mother's house and on the football field, so to speak. It was always just all about myself.
So football, in a way, saved you.
Oh, yes. I mean, if you go back to my hometown and my neighborhood where I was just at a few days ago, some of the guys that I've played along with and grew up with, I mean, those guys are still there. And, you know, I just try to go and show them that, hey, man, if I'm capable of doing the things that I'm doing, and it's all about putting your mind to what you want to do if you want to be successful in life. But if this is where you want to be all your life, then, you know, I can't help you if you don't want to be helped.
One of the problems you had to overcome, you talk about in the book, is your relationship with your father. When was the last time you talked to him?
It's been a few years. I haven't spoken to him in a few years.
Has he tried to contact you?
He has, and I haven't contacted him back. But one day I think that, you know, we'll resolve our problems, and maybe one day, you know, we'll have a relationship.
I'm sure you think about that relationship when you deal with your own kids.
Right, I do, and that was one of the things that kind of brought the situation to light to myself. And I know it has to be painful on him to know that he has a son, I didn't want to have a relationship with him early on, or maybe even up to my son's birth. And, you know, maybe one day we can work out our differences and sit down and talk man to man and try to carry on and have a relationship.
Well, you have such a strong sense of responsibility, and he had a weak sense of responsibility.
Oh, yeah, because, my son is my life. And I love him more than words can explain. And I always told myself that if I was to have any children, that I wouldn't, you know, do the things that my father did to me.
But there are any number of athletes, and you've had your problems as well, who have had trouble with the law. Why do you think that is? Some people have said it's because athletes live charmed lives, and they don't have to grow up the way other people do.
I wouldn't say that. You know, it's some people that don't like the professional athlete or the guy that, you know, makes millions of dollars, and certain people think that, you know, they work hard enough that, you know, and people that work 9 to 5 making, you know, $30,000 or $40,000 or $50,000 a year. I mean, they don't like the guy that's young and, you know, flashy and, you know, does all those things, and they think that a guy like myself when I was young, or maybe guys coming into the situation now, that they're not worthy of that because of their way they carry yourself or the way that they act. And we kind of make ourselves targets by the things that we do. But at the same time, I think that you know, a lot of people really don't understand the position and the things that we have to be careful or look out for.
You're pretty candid in this book about your teammates, and you reveal a lot of behind-the-scenes locker room conversations. Do you think they mind having this kind of stuff published?
Oh, it's nothing offensive at all. I mean, it's just things that that I've seen and learned from. And it's nothing in that book offensive to anybody that I've played with. It's just what I've seen and felt, and just being truthful and factual about everything that I put in that book.
The Giants seem to play some of the best football after their star tight end Jeremy Shockey broke his leg in week 14 and missed the rest of the season. And some people have even said that you were a better team without him.
And, you know, I've said that the people that say that, then they really don't know the game of football.
Because he's such a great tight end, and he takes a lot of pressure off of somebody like you when they got to watch him a lot more carefully.
Yeah, I mean, Jeremy, he's one of the main reasons why I came to New York to play with him. And the people that say that, and they really don't understand, you know, the type of effort that guy gives out on a week-to-week basis. Ever since I've been here, he's came out and, you know, played hurt on several occasions and has played well. And, you know, he kind of gets a rap of the guy that, you know, you may see him throw his helmet down or do things like that on the sideline, but the guy's a competitor. You know, he wants to win. He wants the ball. He wants the ball every play if he can get it. And that's the thing that people see. And, you know, he gets that perception. But they don't know the Jeremy that I know.
It's been reported that you're holding out for a new contract with the Giants. How's that going?
It's going pretty good. everything's been positive about it, and I'm looking at being in training camp on time on the 24th, and I figure that everything in the contract will work itself out.
And your ankle will be 100%.
And
the Giants will win another Super Bowl.
That is the goal. That is the reason why I'm here to win world championships.
Meanwhile, we have the book, Plaxico Burress, Giant, The Road to the Super Bowl, published by Harper Entertainment. Thank you so much for being with us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.